Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, we did a good thing. We got the sledgehammer on for... No, I was going to make a sledgehammer golf reference to our next guest, but I remember he's not that good at golf, so he definitely looks good on the course, which is really all that matters. You know me. I'm a big look-good, feel-good guy, and Matt Perino of New York Upstate joining me on the Western Hotline. He subscribes to the look-good, feel-good, a golf dressing campaign. However, it did not translate on the course for the Bills media tournament.
I was happy with my performance. That was the first time I got out this year. The thing for you is, it's like, if you don't go out there and win it, it's like a huge disappointment.
Yeah,
like
headline news. Yeah.
It's kind of why for the last 3 years you haven't showed up on my driveway to play basketball. But it's okay. We can play golf. I get it.
Listen, Marcel has agreed with me in this that, like, especially I can't risk golf season by rolling an ankle in your driveway. You got to understand, when you get old, you're an old man yourself. I know you're turning 40 this year. You're an old man yourself, dude. You roll one ankle, we're talking, this isn't a two or three week turnaround. A rolled ankle at 30, 40 years old, we're talking 6, 7, 10, 15 week injury, icing every day, lifting, raising up your foot. Like, that's no joke now. Like, 10 years ago I rolled my ankle, I'm back up in 2 weeks. Now, I might be done for the whole summer.
I totally 100% respect that. And, you know, John Scott tries to get me to go out and play in his, he's got to pick up a basketball league, a softball league. And it's like, man, if I get hurt, like, we're talking about just like a miserable month.
Correct.
Ahead. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm 100% with
you. And, you know, listen, don't let John Scott pressure you into playing basketball. John Scott's a classic intramural basketball hero. Like, he's out there taking charges, you know, like getting up, yelling in the volunteer referee's face. Like, that is John Scott to a T.
Yeah, without a doubt. And rightfully so. I mean, if I could kind of, you know, mess it up down in the paint like he can in some of these pickup games, I'd probably look forward to that. There's not a lot of matchups.
True.
And pickup that he's not looking forward to. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, he's a big guy. And by the way, like, had it been 2v2 in your driveway, it was 100% you and me on each other, because I was definitely making Marcel go to cover John Scott. I wanted nothing to do with John Scott and the paint.
Yeah, I don't show up if John Scott's not on my team. So we're aligned at this point.
Love that. All right, buddy. Well, listen, it was a long, I don't know, couple of weeks of Bills OTAs down there at One Bills Drive. And you got yourself a good view of what this team is going to look like heading into training camp and obviously this upcoming season. What was the one thing, maybe it was a player, maybe it was what you saw in the brief, install periods on offense or defense. Is there something that stood out to you that you kind of looked to yourself and said, you know, That's a new wrinkle. That's a new phase. This feels different. What was that for you over the first couple of weeks of OTAs, if any?
You know, it's hard because we don't want to overreact to stuff that's happening without any pads. But I think that the wealth of talent, like, that might be flying under the radar that the Bills have at their disposal at wide receiver, I don't think really we as a group are talking enough about how hard that decision is going to be. And Sean McDermott talked about it last week. It's like, you build this thing up and add all this talent, and Brandon Bean's done what he's done to get to this point, to make these hard, hard decisions. Well, there's a ton, especially in the slot. Like, trying to figure out how this is going to shape up in the slot is really hard. And, you know, you have Isaiah McKenzie, Jamison Crowder, who already in 4 weeks looks like he is potentially an upgrade over what we saw from Cole Beasley last year. And I'm not talking about an upgrade over the three-year sample size of Cole Beasley, but I just mean maybe a throwback to what Cole Beasley was at his best in this offense. You have that at your disposal. Then you throw in the rookie Khalil Shakir, and then the wild card, all of a sudden, when they signed Tavon Austin, I wasn't projecting him to really be even in the mix for a roster spot. But now, they love him in that room, Nate. I mean, the way Josh Allen was talking about him the other day, he's a guy to me that I think is going to be one of those glue guys, those valuable veterans that, you know, Sean McDermott covets. Now, he's got to earn the job over the course of the next 6 to 10 weeks. He's got to stay healthy once camp starts, obviously. But, man, they have a ton of wide receiver talent. And, oh, by the way, Marquez Stevenson had a really nice bounce back after a slow start in OTAs. I thought the last 2.5 weeks he was as good as anybody out there. He was making really good catches. Isaiah Hodgins had himself a day, and if he could stay healthy, they're going to have so many tough decisions on this in this wide receiver room.
Yeah, Hodges is an interesting name to me, and you know, a lot of, you know, following along on your post practice, you know, observation pieces and up on your podcast, and not just you but other media members as well, talking a lot about the Case Keenum and Isaiah Hodgins connection during OTAs. And listen, I know there's no pads on, and that's really where, for me, Matt, I've been waiting for Isaiah Hodgins to pop. He seems to pop when the pads are off. He seems to go get a little invisible at times when the pads go on. That to me is going to be the biggest separator, I think, of the wide receiver room, Matt, is when the physicality starts, when the guys start getting pressed at the line of scrimmage, can they make plays? Can they get open for their quarterback? That's when it's going to matter. But Hodgins, Stevenson, you know, and even to a certain extent, you mentioned Tavon Austin. Like, when the pads come on, there are two wide receiver positions, maybe, Matt. I mean, because I want to think that Kumerow and Isaiah McKenzie are locks, and I think Crowder and, you know, Diggs and Davis are locks. That really means there's one position maybe up for grabs and five guys going for it, and that's if you keep six. I would be surprised if this team keeps seven, but maybe that seventh spot is Tavon Austin pushing his way onto the roster.
Right. And, you know, I think in the end, we don't have to go overboard in projecting this, because I think the Bills are going to be able to put one or two of these guys at least on their practice squad if they want, with the rule, with the way the rules are structured and everything like that. It comes down to who don't you want to risk losing the most, you know, at the end. Because they put Isaiah Hodgins on the practice squad all year last year, so they could probably do that again. I don't think anybody's coming for him necessarily. But I was talking about this on a recent episode of the podcast and trying to, like, envision – what now this wide receiver room looks like. And, you know, the last couple of years you had John Brown in 20, then Emmanuel Sanders in that kind of wide receiver two role to start the year. Gabriel Davis is that now, definitively, right? So what does that open up in the wide receiver group? That utility man, that do whatever you need him to do, whenever you need him to do it role, that has been Gabriel Davis over the last two seasons when he had 13 touchdown catches, and I think he was only playing like 30 to 40% of the snaps. That to me is now Isaiah McKenzie. So I'm not going to pencil him or write him in pen in that slot competition, because I can think you could do a little bit of everything with Isaiah McKenzie. I think that maybe they see him internally, and this isn't anything that I have like a source or anything like that, but potentially as a guy that can maybe do more than just that slot receiver role that he's kind of filled in back up to Cole Beasley the last couple of years. And then that opens up that slot spot for maybe Jamison Crowder, Khalil Shakir can kind of go in the Marquez Stevenson role and just develop this season. And then maybe Marquez Stevenson can earn that spot as being your deep threat, your guy that really puts pressure on the defense down the field when he's on the field. So many interesting things. But to your point, when we started this, we're not going to really have a good idea or grasp of this till we see it out at training camp. And the cool thing is 12 open practices. I mean, fans are going to get a really good long look at all of this.
Matt Perino here of New York Upstate Shout Podcast, joining us on the West Her Hotline. We're talking Bills minicamp. We were just talking some receivers. You know, Matt, I'm also interested in your thoughts on the defensive backfield side of things, because it seems like, you know, for the most part, we're not going to see a lot of, again, the evaluation portion, especially at the defensive back position, really comes when the pads come on, right? In the same way I mentioned, you know, the wide receiver room, Isaiah Hodgins, wanting to see those guys step up from a physicality perspective. The same is going to be said about Kyer Elam, the Bills' rookie first-round pick at corner, and Dane Jackson. I mean, that is a legitimate, you know, one-on-one competition that's going to be happening throughout training camp and in the preseason. What have you saw, you know, throughout training camp, or I'm sorry, throughout OTAs from this defensive backfield? Is there something that stood out to you? I know Nick McLeod, we saw and heard from him getting moved back to the safety position. Any other guys stand out to you during this OTA process? Maybe when we got in 7-on-7s, making plays, being sticky in coverage, who really stood out to you in that defensive backfield?
Yeah, I thought Kyer Elam, like, he really trended upwards throughout the entire course of the offseason, which is not a surprise for a young guy that is getting more and more comfortable with the playbook as each day passes. The thing that jumps out at you, even without pads, is the recover speed of Kyer Elam. Like, that speed, that 4.4 40 time that everybody's been talking about over the last couple of months, you see it on the field, no doubt about it. There was a play he made in the last practice of minicamp where Josh Allen saw Jamison Crowder kind of coming open, and they had a miscommunication. And I think he thought he was going to, you know, go down the field, and he just stopped where he was on the left side. And Allen threw it up. It probably would have been a good ball if Crowder finished off a 50-50 ball if Crowder finished the route, but he didn't. But Kyer Elam didn't stop. He noticed. He was watching the quarterback. He read his eyes. He then turned on the afterburners, Nate, and then we were standing right on that sideline. So he was coming basically right at us, and you're just like, your eyes kind of open up a little bit more, and you're just like, wow, that's that speed everybody's talking about. So I, when I'm envisioning this camp battle, right, because Dane Jackson started a lot of games last year, maybe he's in the mix for that other starting spot if Trey's not ready to go week one. I see that. But I don't see a situation where Kyer Elam's not on the field to start unless it's really bad. I go back to what Brandon Bean has said in the past. Like, I'm not going to draft a player in the first round unless I'm 100% sold that he could start day one, because I don't want him to deal with that, like, you know, starting to hear murmurs of being a bust. So I think Elam's going to be on the field, and so far so good. I mean, he's looked really explosive really fast.
Well, let's talk about another guy that came in this offseason, and that's O.J. Howard, Bills tight end. Sort of some weird, you know, like Florio came out with like a weird article yesterday or 2 days ago talking about how, you know, he's not going to push Dawson Knox, maybe. Like, yeah, no kidding. He was not brought in here to push Dawson Knox to be the starting tight end on this team. So that's just a weird thing and felt very out of touch on what's actually happening here at Buffalo. But I digress. And listen, you know, part of, you know, I think of some of your feedback I was listening to about how he was definitely looking a little slower out of breaks. And I'll tell you, you know, from the injury perspective, the Achilles tendon that he tore 2 years ago, that's a tough injury to come back from. You're 6'7" or whatever he is. He's 6'7", 6'8". He's a big guy. How much of the speed that you're watching him play with do you think has to do with him slowing down a little bit from that injury? Or how much, if you could put a percentage on it, part of it too, I think, Matt, is getting comfortable in a new scheme and a new system and asking to be running different routes than maybe he was traditionally running in Tampa Bay. I still have hope that he can be a good, solid, in-line number two tight end. And he didn't have to catch 40 balls to do that.
Yeah, I think this conversation is a really good one. And I had some comments about O.J. Howard. I always am kind of on the fence about putting out too much negative stuff from a padless practice, because I think sometimes people run with it and get a little bit of – I put out that I thought throughout the course of this offseason so far, he seemed a little bit slow and a little bit robotic in his routes. Now, at the same time, I explain that away as – these guys come in, Nate, and the first thing out of their mouths after they get a couple days in the playbook is like, man, this is one of the hardest things I've ever looked at in the NFL. Tavon Austin just said it when he got here a few weeks ago, and he's played for 4 or 5 NFL teams. So that is part of it. I think just getting down what you're supposed to do, I think it's partly why offensive players that are rookies tend to get off to slow starts for the Bills, because of how complicated this has been. And I think there's probably a physical element. I also think there's a voluntary element that if you're O.J. Howard, he didn't tell me this or anything, I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it, but I would probably be going at 60 or 70% in this kind of setting so that I don't suffer an injury being a person that's been pretty injury prone over the course of my career. So there could be an element that we don't even know about where they're dialing him back to keep him healthy, you know, making sure that he gets into training camp. This stuff right now is just more about getting down the concepts. A lot of it's walkthrough, a lot of it's half speed. So it's definitely not something to overreact to, but I just thought, hey, I should probably report this because he has looked a little bit slower than I anticipated, knowing the athletic profile that he comes with.
We were talking about the competition just a few minutes ago at the wide receiver position, how deep that group is, talking about Taven Austin, talking about, like, you know, is this team going to keep seven receivers? One of the things, you know, I read in Joe B's piece this week that, you know, his observations from Wednesday's practice. And, you know, I know you mentioned Isaiah McKenzie a little bit, but I maybe want to like drill down a little bit more on sort of trying to predict what he looks like in this offense this year. And, you know, one of the prevailing thoughts about McKenzie is that he is kind of a one trick pony and that he's not going to run every tree in the route tree and maybe is more of a gadget player. But what are you expecting from McKenzie this year? Like, because frankly, when he got to the team in 2018, he really was one of the pieces that I think started clicking right away with Josh Allen. And then, you know, he's kind of, I would say really from his first season with the Bills to now, we've almost seen a decline in his presence on the field. And yet they re-sign him again for the second straight offseason, this time to a two-year deal. I get the sense, and this is to talk about, we were talking about, you know, Kumaro and Taven Austin, all these guys at the wide receiver position. That doesn't even count their fifth-round pick, Khalil Shakir, who's also in this conversation as well. But for McKenzie, at least this year, where do you see his role evolving to? Because I think the word evolving is important when you're talking about McKenzie's role, because it's not going to be the same as last year.
Right, and you talk about two guys at the top now, and Diggs and Gabriel Davis, who's been pretty available, right? But they've also had their dings over the last couple of seasons. They've missed time. If one of those guys goes out, if you look at this wide receiving core right now, who has the kind of skill set to step up into a supplementary role to the other one that's still healthy? I mean, to me, that's the only guy that really stands out is McKenzie. And we oftentimes box ourselves in to what we've seen so far, right? But the way that you look at Isaiah McKenzie, even the last year, and the way that he moves around the formation, there's a lot of times I've seen in you know, preseason games and actual games, practices over the years, where he lined up outside and ran really good routes and maybe even beat his guy because of his speed, his quickness, and his elusiveness. And there's just not that role for him in the offense. And so, you know, I think now with not a clear-cut veteran number three, you know, I think John Brown kind of settled into that a couple of years ago. I know he was wide receiver too, but there was, you know, Gabriel Davis was coming on and he almost became like the third guy when he got back, right? Then it was last year, I thought Emmanuel Sanders started as that, you know, number one, number two, and then before long, Gabriel Davis took that back as well. Now Davis is that guy, like I said, and I just think McKenzie now, he fits into a more dynamic role, and if the matchup calls for it, I wouldn't be surprised if they lean on him in the slot, a la a Patriots game type situation from last season. And then when it's a game where you're going up against a zone defense and you want to utilize Jamison Crowder's crafty route running ability and ability to find, you know, spots in the zone, maybe you lean on him a little bit more and you work McKenzie in elsewhere. It's going to be interesting. And that's the most interesting thing about all of this that I haven't even talked about yet is the dynamic of Joe Brady now in that offensive room. Like, it's a real collaborative effort that I don't think most, like, casual fans really understand. Like, you think, all right, Joe Brady, he's the quarterback's coach, and it ends there. It really doesn't. He, you know, everybody that's talked about Ken Dorsey, who was the quarterback's coach last year, Stephon Diggs, Devin Singletary, Dawson Knox, they all talked about how much they enjoyed working with Dorsey and his impact on the entire offense as the quarterback's coach. Brady's been an offensive coordinator in the NFL. He was probably the most hyped position coach in the history of college football after that national championship a couple of years ago. And what was he there, Nate? A wide receivers coach. He worked with Justin Jefferson. He worked with Ja'Marr Chase. That kind of infusion of brain power into an offensive room, you really can't understate how much that could potentially mean.
I'm glad you brought up Ken Dorsey in this because, you know, I'm not going to say he's been flying under the radar, but because I think a lot of people are talking about the Ken Dorsey effect and how an offense like Josh Allen's, like, you know, just it's just don't break it, right? Like, don't try to do too much. Don't try to be something you're not, because this is an offense that needs very little change. But I do think Matt, that it does need some level of change. It needs Ken's, I don't know, like his own magic to it. Like to be Brian Daboll, I think would do a disservice to being Ken Dorsey. And I think Ken brings a different element, playing the position at a high level in college in Miami and in a program that had more NFL players than any program I can remember ever. And then playing in the NFL, that means something more than maybe Brian Daboll's experience, which was mostly, you know, coaching at the tight end position. And he got to see the game from a lot of different perspectives as a coach, but Ken's got to see it from the field, and knowing that he has that rapport with Josh Allen already, I think is major key. But like, where do you put maybe like the onus, the pressure that currently exists on the shoulders of Ken Dorsey? Yeah. How real is that pressure?
I think there's some level of pressure on Josh Allen when it comes to Dorsey's success. He kind of tabbed him from the start of this process when Daboll was going, like, yeah, I want Dorsey. Like he said it basically outright. And when he was hired, he said, yeah, that was what I wanted all along. We already have this rapport. So, you know, Josh Allen's going into year five, and he is an MVP candidate for the leading Super Bowl contender. And a lot of the pressure, in my eyes, is going to be on Allen to run this offense and take that next step, to start to evolve into, you know, that coach onto the field a little bit, which I think he's already kind of been. But there was a calming nature to Brian Daboll's approach, right? He had a way about him that welcomed everybody into the room, created this family atmosphere, and then kind of sent everybody out and, you know, let them do their job, but also was this calming presence in games. How's Ken Dorsey going to do with that part of it? Is that part of his demeanor? I've heard that he's super fiery. Like, people don't even understand how competitive he is. And when he's down there, like Gabriel Davis even joked, like, yeah, I kind of want him up in the booth because he's that intense and stuff down on the field. So does he dial that back a little bit now that he's kind of like the CEO of the offense? One thing that somebody said, though, trying to think back if it was Diggs or Davis. I think it was Davis. And he said, the thing that stands out about Dorsey is that he's in attack mode all the time. And if you take this offense with this quarterback and the amount of talent around him, and now you supercharge the attack mentality of that offense, I'm interested to see what that looks like, because they have the horses, they have the creativity, they have the risk, and that could maybe be a little bit more aggressiveness in the run game. Like, how do they utilize their wide receivers in the run game? What is the dynamic mix between James Cook, Zach Moss, and Devin Singletary? That'll be interesting to watch. What's Aaron Cromer's effect on all of that? So, yeah, it's very interesting. They got a couple months to really perfect it. Then they get the preseason, Nate, and they got to figure out, where's Dorsey going to be calling plays from, and can he in three preseason games get the necessary reps on top of what he's already been doing behind the scenes to be able to go out day one and be ready for every situation that comes up with, you know, in a game. That's going to be part of it too. That's the part where I wonder if it's the biggest learning curve for this offense is, like, you know, Dorsey being able to react in game. Maybe he will. He's been a quarterback before. He's called plays on the field before. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that whole dynamic. And, you know, listen, I think the interesting part too about the Dorsey-Allen relationship is, and this is going to go forth as I think Josh Allen is going to get a lot of guys head coaching jobs in this league at the offensive coordinator position because of how good he is. But, you know, it is unique because the Bills are one of the very rare top teams with a defensive-minded head coach. Like, the quarterback for Green Bay, whoever it is going to have Matt LaFleur, an offensive guru, a mastermind, Shanahan, mastermind, right? Like, a lot of these top teams with the top offenses, McVay in L.A., all have offensive-minded head coaches that are all going to have that continuity in the offensive side of the ball, and that's probably never going to be that continuity in terms of coach and quarterback on the offensive side. There may never be a constant here in Buffalo. And that's something to think about for the future that I don't think we've all really kind of taken the time to appreciate.
Yeah. That's a whole podcast episode, right? Like what the next iteration of coaching staff could look like if it ever really falls apart here for Sean McDermott. Like, people ask me all the time on the heels of 13 seconds, like, you know, if he has a bad season this year, like, what's going to happen? Look at the last 17 years. Look at the relationship with these owners. It could be probably three or four bad seasons, and I don't necessarily know that they're gonna move on from Sean McDermott. And listen, in game, what he gets out of rosters usually over the course of his career, he's been in the playoffs three out of four seasons. It's really hard to knock his program and what it does, and it reminds you a lot of Andy Reid, right? Like, when he was coming up with Philadelphia, how many of those near championship runs ended in dramatic and disappointing fashion. And, you know, that around the league, the reputation was that Andy Reid just couldn't win the big one. And then eventually he finds the right role. Now, if you're a Bills fan, you're like, all right, well, I don't want the Eagles portion of McDermott's career to all be in Buffalo before he goes and wins. But you get my point. Like, eventually, I think you go through enough hard times, through enough hard games where you have to react in certain things. And I go back to it, Nate, like, with the way that 13 seconds went down last year, and we've seen a couple articles that popped up over the course of the offseason, people talking about who was at fault and all that kind of stuff. To see the last month in that building, already the buy-in into the McBean way of, like, team building and the excitement to go back to Rochester and how much these guys, you know, love playing together, and the consistent, you know, narrative has been they love playing for McDermott. And so I anticipate it being kind of more of the same. But, yeah, an interesting conversation to have, and we're, you know, we'll continue to have it year after year, I'm sure, if there's another couple of disappointments.
All right, Prino, appreciate you, my friend. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll be chatting soon as we head to training camp. I look forward to seeing you out there at Fisher.
Can't wait, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, man. You too. Matt Prino there in New York Upstate in the Shout podcast on the Western Hotline. I'm going to take a timeout. Pro Football Focus Eric Eager is coming up next here on WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're at the halfway mark here of our Sports Talk Saturday broadcast. We're going back to the Western Hotline now because Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus joins us. He's the co-host of the PFF Forecast podcast. And Eric, good afternoon to you, my friend. Thanks for joining me here on Sports Talk Saturday. We appreciate your time on a weekend, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. We brought you on because I wanted to chat with you about the year two quarterback projections, some of the Tua Mahomes weird discourse from earlier last week, and kind of projecting out some of the Bills' offensive numbers going into this year. And I wanted to start with you with the year two quarterbacks because I do think it's hard to really predict where quarterbacks go from a year two perspective, especially with the change a lot of these year two quarterbacks have experienced this year. Maybe no more than Mac Jones, who's probably the guy that had the best performance as a rookie last year with Josh McDaniels. And now he's got Matt Patricia potentially as his play caller. When you look at the Patriots as a whole, they didn't get a whole lot better across the offensive line. They get, they add a receiver, but he's not a true number one, Devontae Parker. They add like five new running backs in the draft. Where does this offense to you go, considering we have no real way to predict what a Matt Patricia slash, you know, Bill Belichick ran offense is going to look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at, and this is the curse of, you know, a good rookie year as a quarterback. I mean, he was worth about 2.8 wins above replacements, which is worth about $28 million, and he was paid $2.8 million. So that's a really good value for the Patriots. But then ultimately, when that happens, you often see the offensive coordinator get a head coaching job, understandably, right? And so that's what oftentimes contributes to a sophomore slump. I think that's a fairly reasonable thing to assume from Mac Jones, especially considering, you know, Buffalo, Miami, the Jets got better defensively this spring. So to me, I think it's going to be a tough projection there. I think regression is probably in store for Mac Jones. And we saw it near the second half of the season anyway.
Yeah, and I think the second half of that season, in particular for Mac Jones, what stood out to me last year is the lack of a true number one weapon. And I'm not sure Parker's that guy. They've got this assembly, Eric, of a ton of like good number two and number three guys. We didn't see Josh Allen truly ascend until that number one wide receiver got here in Stephon Diggs. But he was able to take incremental steps with the John Browns and Cole Beasleys of the world. I'm wondering that this year, without that true number one receiver, is that step for Mac Jones less likely, knowing that you have the new variable in an offensive coordinator in Matt Patricia who's never called plays before? We don't know what the scheme he's going to back into is. Have they done enough at the skilled position player position across, whether it's tight end, receiver, running back, to surround him with enough talent to take a step? Or are we just going to sit here and assume that almost regardless of the players he has around him, he's bound to take that step back this year and using that second half of the season last year as maybe the key or the predictive measure to say so?
I think so. I mean, I think it's fairly reasonable to say, look, like Parker has had number one receiver moments. Aguilar is the guy that can take the top off of defense. With Kendrick Bourne as a guy who's been a contributor to a solid offense basically his whole career. But, you know, when you look at, the tight ends, I mean, like, they didn't get the production out of the tight ends that I think they wanted to in free agency. So, I think that they're making projections on these guys as well. They had a good year last year. They hope to have a great year out of those guys. And to me, I don't know if that's a great bet to make.
So speaking of teams with some lackluster wide receivers, and I'll leave Mooney out of this conversation because I like him a lot, but I am of the mind, and I probably am in the large majority here, that Chicago simply did not do enough this offseason to surround Justin Fields with the talent on the offensive line and skill positions that I think was really required to get a true good look of what you're going to have from Justin Fields. Short of just being spectacular with not a lot of good surrounding supporting cast, how do you judge Justin Fields year two, where he's going to get 17 games to play and he's not going to be a guy fighting with Andy Dalton and some other veteran for playing time? Like, he's going to get the majority of the snaps this year, if not all of them, if he can stay healthy. How does one try to evaluate what he's able to do with the supporting cast that he has in Chicago?
I think it's really hard. I mean, I think PFF grades do a decent job. Like, if a guy's not getting open and he's still throwing darts and they're just incomplete, then, you know, we'll grade him better than, you know, if he's missing wide open guys. But it's going to be hard. And, I think, you know, one of the reasons Ryan Poles picked the Chicago Bears ahead of the Minnesota Vikings is that he was able to start with a blank canvas for the most part. You know, Kwesi Adepo-Mensah in Minnesota, ownership wanted them to stay the course with the current roster. And, you know, that I think long term is going to be bad for Minnesota. For Chicago, you know, they trade Khalil Mack. They have a lot of dead money on their cap this year because next year they want to be able to make plays. There wasn't really much that they could do to help Justin Fields. But then at the same time, they go in the draft, they take Kyler Gordon, instead of a wide receiver. You know, they take Zelus Jones as opposed to, some of the better guys. So I think it's one of those things where they don't believe that much in Justin Fields, and that he has to produce well without much support for them to be a buyer of him, which I think is kind of a rough situation to be in.
I think it's incredibly unfair, Eric, because, I mean, this is a guy that I think, frankly, went to the worst possible situation. And that's, I think, one of the worst things an NFL franchise can do is let a lame duck coach and lame duck general manager draft a quarterback, because it's essentially a waste of a pick. And if you are planning on, and let's just, you know, for predictive measures here, say that Justin Fields struggles this year, because I don't know a reason why he wouldn't, and they end up moving on, there's not really, like, a way to recoup assets when you have a depreciated asset that everyone knows you're trying to unload. So how do you, if you're NFL owner, the lame duck coach, and I'm thinking of Nagy in this, and maybe to a certain extent Zimmer last year, but I think there was a real sense that they wanted Zimmer to succeed. It just didn't work out from ownership. I think it's one of the biggest mistakes an NFL franchise can do is let a coach and a general manager with, like, who are obviously on the hot seat go ahead and draft a quarterback. And I think it's one of the worst mistakes NFL franchises make.
I agree. I think that the hard part is for ownership. Usually the cap situation is not so dire. You know, the hard part is when they allow the lame duck teams to sort of go all in, when they're not that good, you know. And I think you see kind of with, you know, Minnesota and Chicago, and then, but like you look at like a team, you know, I'm trying to think of a Chargers team, right, where, you know, Anthony Lynn hasn't done the best job in the world. They take, you know, Justin Herbert, you know, they come into that situation better probably,
sure,
than Chicago's team does. So I think it's more about where the cap was and the fact that not only did they draft the young quarterback, but they went somewhat all in as far as, salary, like the Jimmy Graham contract and stuff like that. To me, that leaves the roster somewhat desolate as we come into 2022.
So do you, like, subscribe to a certain type of rebuild strategy? Because Chicago is kind of going in the opposite direction. You mentioned, I mean, they didn't have that first-round pick, but they go out, they get Kyler Gordon, they're drafting, wide receivers that are 25 years old later in the draft. But this is a team and an organization that has, frankly, ignored the offensive and defensive lines in terms of trying to rebuild them with youth. And I think if you look across the league, most teams, when a new coach, when a new general manager comes in, the strategy is to build from within and then build out from there. Build the offensive line, get it into position, then draft the franchise quarterback so they're set up for success. Now, Cincinnati didn't really do that, right? I mean, they had one of the worst offensive lines in football for the first 2 years of Joe Burrow's career, but it worked out for them because they built one of the strongest skill positions in all of football with Chase and Higgins and Tyler Boyd. But I'm wondering, like, is there a certain model you subscribe to that you believe gives a franchise their best opportunity to set a quarterback up for success when they ultimately do draft them?
Yeah, and the Bengals drafted sort of built a resilient defense around Burrow. There were 6 or 7, I think, members of their secondary last year that had played 1,000 snaps with a different team other than the Bengals at the NFL level. So that, you know, that is something as well where you build a defense that gives yourself a chance. You're always going to have issues, right? You go from 2-14 to 10-7 in 2 years. You're still going to have weaknesses along your offense. We also have the issue, though, is like when you build an offensive line, like you look at Cleveland, right? So they built the offensive line. They built a decent defense. And, you know, Baker Mayfield ultimately wasn't, you know, the guy there. And then you're left, you know, extending Wyatt Teller, extending Joel Bitonio, giving Myles Garrett a ton of money, and you're still not that good because your quarterback, you know, isn't great either. So I don't know if there's one way. I do believe tanking works. I do believe in this idea that, you know, if you're not going to compete for a championship, you know, having a quarterback like a Kirk Cousins or somebody like that who can help you understand who's good on your team, having a quarterback like Andy Dalton who can tell you that Darnell Mooney is good, I like that approach. I think the problem is teams, you know, sort of buy way too much into that and think like 9 wins is really a success when in reality, like, you're not doing much with 9 wins, right? As Buffalo found out, you really need that elite super quarterback to really compete for championships in the NFL.
Eric Eager here of Pro Football Focus on our Wester Hotline. We're talking about year two quarterbacks. And one guy that I think has been criminally under-talked about in this group of year two quarterbacks is Davis Mills, the quarterback in Houston. And in the same conversation, we're talking about the Minnesotas of the world, right? Overvaluing a 9-win season, a just above a 500 season. I at times last year, I scratched my head thinking about Nick Cassero's plan of essentially building a roster of a bunch of really middling aged roster players that didn't really have a future on short-term contracts that essentially were special teams players on other teams. But the way that they built, it feels like, and they didn't have that first-round pick last year, they go out, they get Davis Mills, they finally hand the offense over to him because Tyrod Taylor just can't stay healthy. And he, I don't want to say was the kind of, towards the end of the season, one of the better rookie quarterbacks of that draft class last year. But it's hard for me to say that, like, Trevor Lawrence looked better than Davis Mills at any point last year. And yet, nobody's really talking about Davis Mills like the expectation that we're talking about, you know, Trevor Lawrence making the year two jump from, you know, getting away from Urban Meyer, and rightfully so. But, like, I think their building method, although at first seemed very dumb and very head-scratching, it's starting to yield, I think, an interesting route for them to get out of the basement of the NFL. I mean, I'm not predicting they're going to be a worst-to-first team. I think the Jaguars are in a way better position in that division. But I'm certainly, like, I'm looking at them as a team that won't be as bad as they were last year, and I'm not exactly sure what kind of take that is. It's not like a scorching hot take or anything, but they do appear to be rotating and moving in the right direction, considering they're still a team that does not have a lot of top-end talent.
Yeah, the organizational rot there is kind of high, you know, so I'm never really going to buy into Houston. But, yeah, Davis Mills was the third most valuable rookie quarterback in the NFL last year. He was pretty good considering he had, you know, really one guy to throw to. And so the offensive line, Laremy Tunsil basically quit on the team halfway through the year. And Tyus Howard was, you know, just kind of a guy. Defense wasn't great, didn't give him a lot of support. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's a decent football player. I just have a really hard time, you know, seeing how that team's going to be successful given, you know, the way in which the organization is set up, the things that they've, you know, kind of undergone as far as, you know, it's a place where somebody's career goes to die for the most part, right? It feels like the early Gruden Raiders where, like, Doug Martin would go there and it's just like, give me another couple years of salary and then I'm out of here. That to me is the only part of the Houston thing that I don't like. I mean, I think Mills played wonderfully last year.
The last two guys I want to ask you about, Eric, and obviously Trevor Lawrence was sort of like viewed as this Andrew Luck can't miss number one prospect, and he certainly did not play that way last year. And it wasn't just the fact that he had Urban Meyer and the absolute tire fire that followed him around all season, but even when you wanted to isolate Trevor Lawrence away from what Urban Meyer was doing in that franchise, it just never looked like he was comfortable at any point last season. And I'm wondering, with the additions of, you know, with Christian Kirk and frankly, Doug Peterson, but also guys like, you know, Zay Jones, who are good replacement-level wide receivers. Now, they probably overpaid for those receivers, but this is going to be a much better collection of pass catchers. Evan Engram and having him as your number one tight end with Kirk and Lewis and Marvin Jones and some of the other pieces that they're going to have, it feels like he's got the pieces around him to take a step. But, I mean, he has to take a step, right? Because he was not good last year.
Yeah, a lot of stuff broke down around him. I know the film guys really like how he handled the pocket presence, you know, his pocket presence and stuff like that. But, you know, ultimately he was not accurate. He didn't take good care of the football. There was a lot of things to dislike about the way in which Trevor Lawrence played last year. I think, you know, as far as what I'd like to see in this team, you know, Doug Peterson did wonders with Carson Wentz early on in his career. You like that. I overbought into Urban Meyer because I thought with guys like Schottenheimer and Bevel, he had some competence there, but that certainly did not shine through. But yeah, I mean, the offensive line, you get Robinson in there. I would have liked them to probably draft somebody like Evan Neal or Ike Ekwonu instead of Trayvon Walker if they were going to go with somebody other than Aiden Hutchinson. But yeah, I think that the thing is set up nicely. I mean, they're the team in they're the last to first team in the NFL this year as far as the team that I would bet on at market prices, just because, you know, they have a defense that's not devoid of talent. They play in a really bad division. You know, they're basically a Matt Ryan meltdown away from having a shot to be, you know, a contender in that division.
Yeah, that's a great point. The last guy, obviously, and I think maybe the most interesting, is Trey Lance. And, you know, the Jimmy G era ends up ending in a really weird way because he was just exactly what Jimmy G has always been. I mean, a game manager, a guy that's not going to fit the ball into tight windows and is going to not necessarily make a lot of mistakes, but be a guy that in the playoffs can have one or two good performances and elevate your team to an NFC Championship game, what he's done multiple times with that franchise. But with the Trey Lance era starting, Eric, I'm wondering how you project what Trey Lance will be, considering the small sample size we had last year. He didn't really look comfortable, and I think there was a lot of people saying, well, this is a guy that did not play enough college football, only one full season. Like, him sitting on the bench would be detrimental to his development. He needs to play. And I think I agreed with that originally, but then I saw him play at times last year in place of Jimmy G, and I really wondered what it was going to look like when he took over as a full-time starter. We're going to get to see that this year.
Yeah, he has the widest distribution of any player in that draft class from a running back or from a quarterback perspective. And I actually thought he had the lowest projection. I liked him less. I always thought people were relieved that they took Trey Lance instead of Mac Jones, but in reality, all of us wanted them to take Justin Fields at three,
yep,
right? And that made the most sense. But people overlooked the fact that taking Trey Lance at three was kind of a blunder. And in my opinion, like, they're going to be productive. They've been productive. I mean, Nick Mullins' career yards per pass attempt is pretty high. You know, last year Jimmy G had a 107.4 passer rating, throwing from 10 to 19 yards. He had, in our system, two big-time throws, 15 turnover-worthy plays. So that's kind of like PFF's version of touchdown-to-interception ratio.
Yep.
And so, like, Shanahan was able to, like, make good offense out of that. So I think that the bar for Lance fundamentally will be low. Like, he doesn't have to perform that well for that offense to be successful. It, to me, it's just like, why did you trade the farm for that? Why, you know, ultimately, like, you're thinking about giving up first round, giving up Deebo Samuel to get first round picks back because you traded so much to get Lance.
Right.
Did that make a ton of sense to me? Not really.
Eric, I appreciate you, man. Tell the folks where they can find you on Twitter if they don't follow you already, and any work you guys got coming up the pipeline here.
PFF underscore Eric on Twitter. And, the PFF forecast comes out every Wednesday night and every Sunday night.
Awesome, Eric. Appreciate you, man. Enjoy your rest of your weekend, and thanks for being available for me on a Saturday.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
All right, Eric Eager there of Pro Football Focus on the West Hur Hotline. Got to take a timeout. On the other side, we'll preview hour three. We've got Jeff Lloyd of Locked on Browns. He's coming up next here on WGR.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, let's put a bow on hour two here of Sports Talk Saturday. If you missed any of our second hour, you'll want to go back WGR550.com on demand. We've got Matt Perino of New York Upstate at noon, and we just had Eric Eager of PFF join us. Talk about the year two quarterback carousel. It'll be really interesting to see sort of the development and who ends up taking that big year two step. I'm certainly interested to see what Trey Lance is going to do in San Francisco. A lot of interesting stuff talking about Lance there from Eager. So if you missed any of that, you'll want to go do on-demand audio on the website. Take a listen to there, and Zach will have that up here at the following of this hour. Next hour, coming up here in just a few minutes, we're going to have Jeff Lloyd of Locked on Browns. We're going to talk about what happens if Deshaun Watson gets suspended for the whole season. What's the outlook look like for the Browns? So we'll get to Jeff on the other side here as we continue on here on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.